Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Sidebar, presented by True Crime Daily, taking you inside the courtrooms of high-profile and notorious cases from across the country. I'm your host, Joshua Ritter. I'm a criminal defense lawyer based in Los Angeles and previously an LA County prosecutor for nearly a decade. You can find me on all social media at Joshua Ritter ESQ or at joshuaritter.com. We're recording this on Friday, April 5th, 2024. In this week's episode, a doctor charged with attempting to poison her husband is now facing additional allegations as her alleged victim seeks a divorce with sole custody of the couple's children. Plus, we dive into the case of a deadly stabbing of teens during a river tubing confrontation as jurors hear wildly contrasting versions of events. But first, jury selection is underway in the murder trial of an alleged doomsday prophet facing the possibility of the death penalty. Today, we are very excited to be joined by Gisela Kay, an author, true crime broadcaster, and host of the popular YouTube channel Grizzly True Crime. Gisela, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I'm a big fan of your YouTube channel, so I invite everyone to check that out. And one of the reasons I'm a fan of it is that you are always so well connected on what's going on in these cases. I know you do a lot of research and you follow them closely, so I'm very eager to hear your thoughts on these cases. So let's jump right in. First, out of Boise, Idaho, an alleged quote-unquote doomsday prophet may now be facing his own doomsday as jury selection commences in the man's death penalty qualified murder trial. Chad Daybell, the fifth husband of doomsday mom, Lori Vallow, stands accused of the murder of Vallow's two young children, Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow, along with the murder of his first wife, Tammy Daybell. Vallow was convicted on similar charges last year, giving prosecutors a roadmap for gaining Daybell's conviction. Tylee and JJ's bodies were discovered in shallow graves on Daybell's property. However, Daybell's trial will differ from Vallow's in two significant ways. First, the judge has allowed for the presence of live cameras in the courtroom, and second, the possibility of the death penalty. The latter condition will significantly affect jury selection as prosecutors in Daybell's defense will ultimately select around 50 potential jurors before narrowing down the pool to 18 jurors, 12 of whom will render the verdict, while the other six will be present during the duration of the trial to serve as alternates. The trial is expected to last 10 weeks, and we will, of course, keep you updated as the proceedings continue. My first question is, this case is getting a lot of attention. It's getting a lot of attention all over the country, but in particular in Idaho. And I know from having friends up there and spoken to people who are reporters and covering the news up there, it is a real firestorm of attention. Do you think that they're going to have trouble, Gisela, finding jurors who haven't already made up their mind about a case of this kind of significant media coverage in that community in Idaho?
I mean, that's always something that one worries about. But having listened into some of the jury selection, I mean, they're making really good progress at the time of this recording. I think by the time this comes out, they're going to have their jury selected. And just listening to the questions, no, some people say they haven't heard about the case. You know, they don't have any bias. They've never heard about it, which is actually quite odd. But if you think about it, even for me as a true crime YouTuber, you'll be surprised, you know, when you walk around and talk to people, they've never heard of the cases. They'd be so busy deep diving. So there's always a chance that people aren't following them.
It is funny. I remember working on some really high profile cases in Los Angeles where I'm where I live and work. And you would think that this is the only thing people are talking about because you live in this world. And then you realize people are like concerned with their kids and they're concerned with their favorite sports team and they've got other things going on and they're watching entertainment news rather than crime news. So I agree with you. I think that there is much of an attention as it's getting. I'm sure the jurors have heard about it, but it's more important about whether or not they made up their minds. Gisela, one of the things that's unique about this case is the death penalty, and that really affects jury selection. And I've sat through a couple of jury selection voir dire processes for death penalty cases, and it becomes incredibly intense when people are asked questions about could they vote for the death penalty. And have you seen any of that line of questioning in what you've been watching in this case so far?
I've seen some of that where the judge says, would you always vote for the death penalty for any person charged with murder? And it's amazing how long, it's almost like a trick question, how long people pause and then like, no, you know, because it depends on the circumstances. So that is one of those questions in a trial I covered before, Burgos Aviles. People said, yes, you know, the jury that they had voted for, death penalty case. If required, they would. But at the end of the day, they didn't. They didn't vote for the death penalty in that case. So you just never know. You know, it's very interesting to listen to how people feel about that.
Yeah, I think it's a topic that some people might have thought about before. They might have had a casual kind of discussion with friends about the death penalty in general terms. But it's funny to see people when they actually are being asked, what would you do? I remember watching situations where it's explained to the jurors that, you know, they could be the deciding vote. If all the other jurors have voted for death and now it's up to you, you could be the deciding vote on whether or not this person goes to the death chamber or not. You can see the wheels begin to turn in people's heads when they're confronted with those types of questions that, like I said, they may have thought about in general before, but not given it that kind of real life attention before. I know that you watched the previous trial with Lori Vallow closely. Listen to it. Right. Yeah, that big another big difference in this one being that it's going to be videotaped. What do you think? Do you think that we're going to see the same game plan out of the prosecution this time around, or what are your thoughts on how this case might unfold?
I think it's going to be very similar with a lot of the same witnesses, and I feel so sorry for them, but they have to go through round two now because the trials were severed. But with Chad Daybell now facing a first-degree murder charge for his wife's death, that also changes things. And then this being a death penalty case, I think it's going to be a lot more intense and we're going to learn a lot more details, particularly because the bodies like of the children and his wife were found on his property. His wife died in their home when he was there and the children were buried on his property. So I think it's going to get very intense with the evidence they present, because not just conspiracy to commit murder, like Lori, I'm very excited to see what we learn from this.
Yeah. No, you make a really good point. Her theory was much more about conspiracy, whereas the theory concerning him is, at least as it particular when it comes to his ex-wife, Tammy Daybell, is that he's actually the one that killed her. So we might see some more specifics regarding that crime. No, I don't think they made any kind of claim that Lori Vallow was present during Tammy Daybell's murder, but only that she kind of conspired to participate in the overall plan. So that's a really good point that we might see some more detail on that. How about the defense tactics? I mean, in Lori's case, it seemed as though her attorneys were operating with one of their hands tied behind her back. And later on, we find out that she was calling many of the shots. Do you think that we're going to see the same kind of measured approach by his defense, or do you think that they're going to come out much more, guns a-blazing, swinging?
And guns blazing, especially being a death penalty case, his life is literally on the line, and it would be pretty easy for them to have a strategy to say that Lori is the mastermind behind all of this. Which one could argue? Which one is it really? Because he wrote the books long before he met Lori. You know, I think he's got a lot more planning in it than her. But look at her track record. Look how many other people died around her, were murdered, allegedly. She's facing other charges. So I think they're going to go in more intensely than ever. Although it's just one attorney, John Pryor, now his defense. Yes.
I agree with you. I don't think we're going to see that same kind of, you know, defense taken at arm's length that we saw in her trial. I think you're right. He's fighting for his life. I think he's going to say, listen, I have these religious beliefs that many of you may think are bizarre, but none of them included taking anyone's life. And that was all on Lori. I would not be surprised if they, from the get-go, they are blaming Lori for all of this and that she just misunderstood or, you know, went about doing things on her own and that Chad had nothing to do with it. What do you think? There's a lot of people, myself included, who think that there might be a chance that she could even testify if her devotion for her prophet husband goes that far. Do you think there's any chance she might take the stand herself?
I don't know if that risk would be worth it to put Lori or him on the stand. I don't know, these two and their beliefs, because I really think that even though they say it was for money, power, and sex, I really think they believed in what they were doing, you know, in the charts and the zombies and everything. So putting her on the stand, I think, let's say if the defense does that, that's not going to help. If the prosecution does that, will it really help their case? I don't think so. It will be very interesting, though. It will be jaw-dropping if they do put her on the stand. Can you imagine? Yeah.
No, I agree. She's such a wild card. I thought that, you know, maybe if she's going to say, hey, I did this all, Chad knew nothing about it because she's so just brainwashed into this belief in him. But you're right. She's so unpredictable, too. Maybe they're just afraid of what might come out of her mouth when she actually takes the stand. But anyhow, like you said, we may have a jury as we're recording this later today, or certainly it looks like early next week, and trial will begin soon after that. So we will continue to follow it and update you all.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move to Hudson, Wisconsin, where jurors were presented with two wildly contrasting versions of a tubing confrontation that left one teen dead. Nikolai Miu is charged with one count of first-degree murder and four counts of attempted murder after he allegedly brandished a folding knife, stabbing five teens on Wisconsin's Apple River. Prosecutors say that Miu was the aggressor in the fatal stabbing that left 17-year-old Isaac Schumann dead. Meanwhile, Miu's attorney contends that the man acted in self-defense after he was taunted and surrounded by as many as 13 intoxicated teens. One of the teens began filming Miu and the events leading up to the stabbing after he allegedly heard Miu, cloaked in snorkeling gear, say that he was, quote, looking for little girls. Miu maintains that he donned the snorkeling gear in order to find a cell phone that his friend dropped in the river. The cell phone footage, as well as body cam video, has been featured heavily in the trial thus far. Trial is expected to continue for several more days, and we will keep you updated as the case develops. All right, Gizla, jump right in. What are your impressions so far of this case? How is the prosecution doing?
This is a very controversial case. And as I've watched as much as I can, because I'm always covering lots of cases, so every moment I can, I'm watching this. And my feelings have changed throughout. So if I was on the jury, I can't imagine how they're feeling now. You know, because one would think in the beginning, okay, the defense was doing really well. It seemed like, well, it's self-defense. What if the guy had PTSD? And now he's surrounded by all these teenagers taunting him and they're drunk. And it's just one, you know, against 13. But as time has gone on and they've shown more body cam, they've shown more evidence. Oh, dear. I think the prosecution is doing so well now because they showed his behavior afterwards, when he put his sunglasses on and a hat and just he walked past law enforcement pretending, oh, I have no idea what happened here. And when he was arrested, he said, oh, I heard someone got stabbed, but and I just fit the profile. So what happened? Can't pretend to know. If he said, look, I was jumped by 13 teenagers, I acted in self-defense, please help me, that's different. I think things have taken a turn now. Now the state is doing really well.
Very interesting. Wow. It's amazing how those the tide can turn in a trial. And we're still in the prosecution's case, too. So the defense hasn't even really started to put on their evidence. I saw that they called a witness out of order this morning. But it will be interesting to see if your mind changes again once the defense really gets into their case. But again, it's funny that you point that out about his actions afterwards, because so many times these cases often take a turn for the prosecution when it comes to that consciousness of guilt type evidence that you may be able to understand how a horrible incident like this could take place. But then why are you behaving so shady afterwards, right? Why are you making these contradictory statements to the investigators as if you're trying to get away with something because you know what you did was wrong? Have you seen the video? It's a very shaky video. Do you think that's going to play a huge role in the verdict with the jurors, or is it going to come much more down to eyewitnesses?
I think if the jurors take that video with them when they're deliberating, just to look over again, and they pause it frame by frame, it really doesn't look good for him, because he takes the knife out of his pocket. He's swimming with a knife, so there's that. But his wife said he brought it along to cut ropes with the tubes, and she also said he always had his pocket knife on him. So there's sort of two different stories, but okay, he had a knife with him. But he takes it out and pauses and then smiles, and he just holds it like down by his waist. Ooh, that really, if they pause and they see that, because they kind of played it throughout, that looks extremely bad for him and could definitely, that's why I'm saying that from seeing that and pausing it myself, I'm like, ooh, this guy is so guilty. In my opinion, at first I thought, no way, this is going to be not guilty. But now I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's very strange that he approached the group, that he had his snorkels on. He first said he took it along, his wife said, to look for jewelry, like lost jewelry in the water. When she said, don't wear your jewelry because it'll fall off in the cold water, he's like, oh, I'll take my snorkels on and look for jewelry. Then he says he's looking for a phone. So the story changes. Then he walks into a group basically of drunk teenagers. I think it's like one of those guys that's looking for a bar fight. That's what it reminds me of.
Oh, interesting. Like he was looking to antagonize them. Because that was my next question to you, as you mentioned it, that these teens, I think it's pretty clearly obvious that they are very intoxicated, many of them, and they're rowdy and they're all kind of screaming at him. What, you know, in your watching it, and I'm just using you as kind of the 13th juror here, what was your feeling on the behavior of all of the teens and how that might play a role?
I mean, at first I was concerned about that, but if I was on the jury, one could always say, well, I've been drunk once upon a time. Like, you know, I'm sure people rebelled in various ways as teenagers, so one could actually relate. Or if it's a mom with teenage boys or something, or girls, they could actually say, what if that was my child? They were just out. Yes, they were being naughty. Yes, they were drinking. But why did he not leave? They said, go, leave, get away. And he just wouldn't. No. He just kept going. So it seems, again, to me like someone who's almost looking to pick a fight of sorts, which I didn't think in the beginning, and it could change again. But then their behavior, yes, it's almost like don't poke the bear. That's what I think about this whole group. And they like all think safety in numbers. One even said they felt safe because they were all a group. But unfortunately, when someone's completely unhinged, which seems to be the case, especially considering his behavior after, well, yeah, there's so many lessons. I always think of true crime cases. What can we learn from this? How can we stay safe? How can we keep others safe? There's so many lessons in this case.
Yeah. And like you said, whether he was looking for a fight or not, he's the one that brought the knife into the situation. He's the one that introduced this deadly weapon into the situation. Had he not had that knife on him, or had he just kept it in his pocket, maybe all of this would have turned out very, very differently. But we shall see. I appreciate your thoughts on that. Like we said, I think that case might be coming to its end within a few days now. So we will keep everyone updated. Finally, we move to Irvine, California, where a doctor charged with attempting to murder her husband faces shocking new allegations, as well as divorce proceedings in addition to her criminal charges. Yu Emily Yu stands accused of poisoning her husband, Jack Chen, with the caustic chemical cleaner Drano, which she allegedly administered in his morning beverage. Yu was charged after her husband used hidden cameras to monitor the kitchen area, and Chen promptly filed for divorce, seeking custody of the children of the couple's two children. Yu's visitation rights have now been revoked amid new allegations that she was training her children to lie about their father and preferred custody destination. According to a therapist, Yu's daughter said that the little girl feared her mother would try to poison her next and claimed that Yu had coached her to tell authorities that she wanted to be with Yu 24/7. The mother is also accused of training her children to claim that the Drano allegedly used to poison Chen was in the house to be used for an ant deterrent after the father refused to purchase ant traps. Additionally, Chen has accused Yu of being physically abusive with the children. Yu's next court date in the divorce proceedings is scheduled for April 30th, while her criminal trial is scheduled to be in late May. All right, Gisela, this is another case where video might play a pivotal role here. If you've seen the video, and I know there's stills online, but I think you can still find the video, it does appear, to me at least, that she's tampering with his tea and that she's putting something in it. And you know, he, along with his testimony, I think you can put the pieces together. Do you think that that is enough? I mean, is this case over with that video, or is there any rational explanation that she might be able to provide?
I think the parental alienation that she's busy doing, which has got the extra charges that she's now facing, I think that is a red flag in itself and the way she's treating the children. And based on the documents that I read, this poisoning goes back about 3 months before he actually, because he first got suspicious. He thought something tasted all weird, I'm feeling strange. So that backstory and the medical records, when he went to actually get checked, like what is, I think something's being put in my, I think it was like hot lemonade. Can you just check it out? And he had a swollen esophagus and ulcers and everything. So that confirms it. And that's about 3 months before he then took those exhibits, which is also amazing how much patience he had, just playing the slow game to get all the evidence in. So yes, I think it's, the evidence is quite overwhelming.
Yeah. And you're right. This is, again, one of those cases where it's not, it might not be the crime itself that is her undoing, but her conduct afterwards with trying to coach her children. I mean, there could be a situation, and let me ask you, if that child has to take the stand at a criminal case and is testifying against their mother, what effect do you think that would have on a jury?
That will hold so much credibility. Can you imagine a child on the stand pulling at the heartstrings of the jury and just hearing, I mean, the mother said terrible things to her children, calling them stupid and, you know, locking them in rooms and making them cry. And then also saying, you will say that this Drano was just to catch ants or something, and you will. So the coaching is horrendous. It's really going to turn the case if they leave that for last. If the state leaves that for last when she goes to trial, oh, my word, I think that could definitely sway the jury.
Yeah, I think you're right. And two, it shows how kind of diabolical she is. People may think, what in the world would she want to do this for? Because they know nothing about her. But if they hear that type of evidence of the kind of scheming and planning that this person is capable of, and testimony coming from her own child, that, like you said, that might be enough to seal it. My last question. She's a doctor. Are you telling me that Drano was the best that she could do in this whole thing? Doesn't that seem ridiculous to you?
It does. But we've seen many poison cases, which are completely ridiculous. And she's also a dermatologist. So we'll remember that. Doctor. So I don't know. The Drano, maybe she thought it would not taste so strong in the lemonade or something. But in all poison cases, I'm very shocked at what people choose to do.
Yeah. Well, we just saw a case not too long ago where somebody used Visine. I didn't even know that was a thing, but somebody used Visine to poison someone. So
Jessica,
you're right.
She's just sentenced as we're recording. She's being sentenced. Covered the trial as well. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're right. People, I guess, I guess I make the mistake of trying to apply logic to people who are already operating under incredibly illogical circumstances by wanting to commit murder in the first place. But yes. That just stood out to me that, like, really, Drano, you couldn't be more clever than something so obvious like that.
Thankfully not.
And thankfully he was able to discover it ahead of time. In the meantime, though, Gisela, that is our show for this week. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find out more about you?
They can find me on YouTube on Grizzly True Crime, Grizzly like the bear, okay, double Z, Grizzly True Crime. And I'm there almost every day.
Fantastic. I invite everyone to check it out. I'm your host, Josh Ritter. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joshua Ritter ESQ or at joshuaritter.com. You can find our sidebar episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and we want to hear from you. If you've got questions or comments you'd like us to address, tweet us your questions with the hashtag TCD Sidebar. And thank you again for joining us at the True Crime Daily Sidebar.